The Post is brought to you by Legacy Community Health and KPFT Pacific Radio. Thank you for tuning in. Welcome to The Post, the heartbeat of a healthy Houston, with your host from Legacy's Public Affairs Office. Let's hear what the word is today.
Hello, and welcome to The Pulse, Heartbeat of a Healthy Houston. My name is January Leo, and I am the Director of Public Affairs with Legacy Community Health. The Pulse strives to explore timely and topical health policy issues that affect Greater Houston. We come to you live every other Monday from 1 to 1:30 p.m., and if you have any questions or comments throughout the show, please tweet us at Legacy Actions. That's actions with an S. And today we're going to be discussing veterans and mental health, and our guest is Army Specialist Monique Nuncio Rodriguez. She is the Harris County Outreach Coordinator with Grace After Fire. Welcome, Monique.
Hi, thanks for inviting me. I'm happy to be here.
We're thrilled to have you here. So, in 2012, President Obama declared November as Military Family Month. And we celebrate Veterans Day on November 11th. And both you and your husband have both served our country. And what led you to this decision? What led you to wanting to join the Army?
We joined in 2008, and prior to then, we had been struggling in maintaining employment. The full recession would hit the following year, but we were already feeling the effects. After getting laid off a second time, I desperately wanted to finish my bachelor's degree and get a stable job, and I saw that military would be able to provide that for me.
Okay. So, Sorry, I'm like lost myself there. That was such a good response. What are your thoughts on the time that you served? What was your experience like when you did serve?
Serving in the military is not easy, especially for a female. While it was, it has been the most difficult journey of my life so far, it has also been the most rewarding. The people you meet in the most challenging days and hours become your lifelong friends, despite the distance. My only regret about not serving was not having joined sooner. I joined at the older age of 28, so I was roughly 10 years older than many of my peers.
Okay. And you said that there were particular difficulties with being female. It was kind of a different experience, and there's been a lot of press and media about that lately. What was that experience like?
Well, physically, keeping up is challenging, especially because I was 10 years older than most of my peers. But once I got to my duty station, things became much more challenging. I was in a unit with very few females. I was one of few, and there was a lot of gender discrimination, really a lot of hatred and anger of my presence. I was just mistreated horribly to the point where I had to use the commander's open door policy and talk to him directly and let him know what was going on with me, because I got to a point where there was nothing I could do to stop it. And the only way to stop it was from the top, because everything I did was only making it worse. Eventually, I was moved out of that section and placed under basically more of his direct supervision. Nothing ever happened to the sergeant that, did these very embarrassing and dismissing things to me. I was told to avoid him.
Mm. And so there's, a lot going on right now. And I know you serve in the Army,
right.
But with the Marines, with, talk about letting women serve as, is it serving as SEALs or just serving in the Marines? Period.
So SEALs is Navy.
Navy. Okay. Okay. Tell I am not military myself, so any education is great. But it is the Marines, right, that are having this conversation about letting women into combat as
so
Marines.
So all the branches are now required, come the new year, have to report to the Department of Defense whether they are required to open up all positions to females. And if they're going to say that they're not, they have to provide an explanation. And so right now there is this kind of a flood of opening up all these MOSs that were previously restricted to only males, now opening up because they can't justify keeping them closed. So that's kind of what's happening right now. And that's why we're seeing more and more females going through all these new courses that were previously restricted from them, because now the Army or all the branches have to justify it. And if they don't have a valid reason, the Department of Defense is going to order them to open that up to a female. And so that's kind of why this whole new conversation is happening right now, because that deadline is looming and they need facts, they need data, and that's what they're looking for right now.
Okay, so that's what spurred the Marines to kind of, you know, do these studies and to put women through the same training, and, you know, it's coming back, you know, kind of, it sounds kind of 50-50-ish, but the interesting thing about that is they're not releasing the studies publicly.
No, yeah, they're holding obviously that information back, you know, but they're analyzing it and they have to be able to justify their decisions. So many more jobs are opening up. Every week it seems like I'm seeing a new article where they're talking about, you know, 20,000 jobs have just opened up to women, which were so restricted before. And so these women that are going to go into these industries for the first time, or these jobs for the first time, are really the trailblazers. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, they probably will be treated pretty negatively in their environment, but it's breaking that mold. It takes those first hundred few to get through and make it a standard. Mm-hmm. And getting the men acclimated that women are here and we are strong. And if we're capable of being there, if we have the ability to be there, we should be allowed the opportunity to be there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so, Monique, did you actually serve time in combat? Were you stationed overseas at all?
No. The units I've been assigned to just haven't deployed. I was on this hunt trying to get deployed. So while I have never served in combat, my husband, who also served in the military during our same time period, deployed to Afghanistan from 2009 to 2010. So even though he was gone, I was on the home front and I got to kind of feel what military spouses and being in that dual military status felt like. And so through his stories and through his relationships, I was kind of able to feel it secondhand.
Mm-hmm. And you have two children.
Yes.
As well. What has that been like for them?
I was pregnant while my husband was deployed and ultimately gave birth to my first son while he was still in Afghanistan. And so they're young. They know I'm in the Army. They know Dad was in the Army. But they don't really, they were so young that they don't really feel the full effects of it, which has kind of been a blessing in disguise. We'll see what years later, what comes. You know, right now they're only 3 and 5. So they're still young. And there's not a lot of, I guess, permanent damage on their part, but different influences and, you know, depending on the path my career takes in the military, may have future impacts on them.
Okay. And so I understand that you served stateside. Your husband served overseas, but there was a point where you came out of your military service and returned to civilian life for both of you. Do you feel like that there were adequate resources that were available to y'all upon your return?
So just as many other veterans returned back home after their time in service, we also struggled to find jobs, mentally transition, and learn to function without the help and support of the Army. We returned to a Houston that was very different. Not only physically had it grown, but the culture had changed too. It was hard, but we eventually found jobs and we were forced to change our ways in order to succeed. Just as most veterans, it took us about 2.5 years before we fully transitioned and got into the groove of our new life. We utilized several resources available to us to prevent us from going homeless. But thankfully, the resources were available. It just took a lot of work on our part to get it done. Now, things are much easier. And if I were returning now, it would be an easier transition. My husband tells me all the time when I talk about new resources, man, you know, why wasn't that available when we were getting out? and I'm happy to be a part of that change and make things easier for future veterans transitioning.
Excellent. So for listeners who are just joining us today, you're listening to The Pulse on 90.1 KPFT, and our guest is Army Specialist Monique Rodriguez, and she's speaking to us about veterans and mental health. So Monique, you work for a fantastic organization that I've only recently learned about, called Grace After Fire. And from their website, it says they commit to assisting in women veterans' transitions back into family life, achievements in the workplace, and their pursuit of happiness. Can you tell us a little bit about Grace and your role with the organization?
Sure. Grace After Fire is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that was founded in 2008. It's dedicated to helping women veterans help themselves by providing them the means to gain knowledge, insight, and self-renewal. We assist in transitioning women veterans back into civilian sector, and by providing outreach efforts, community resources, peer-to-peer programming. We have a program called Table Talk Color Me Camo. We also have women and family retreats and other veteran-focused events throughout the year to really help integrate the women back into civilian life.
Okay. And how are people referred to you?
Word of mouth, I think, is our most powerful and impactful referral. You know, oh, my friend, you know, my friend knows about you and now she's in trouble too. Can you help her? Other agencies, we are one of two agencies here in the Houston area that really focuses on women veterans. And so a lot of other veteran agencies know when they receive women veterans and it's beyond their means. They know to reach out to us, contact us, and we can take care of them to really dive in those very specific needs.
Okay. How many women do you see?
I think monthly I average about 100 women. I serve about 100 women a month on average. And of course, it varies and fluctuates depending on the months and the time of year. Obviously, you know, as we're wrapping up the calendar year, things will probably get more challenging. And so those numbers will increase. During the summertime, I saw kind of a decrease in numbers dropping down to about 60 a month. But it fluctuates, obviously, as financial resources become available or, you know, we lose those resources in the community.
Okay. And what are you doing specifically with Grace After Fire?
So we provide peer mentoring support. You know, we have weekly groups both in Houston and San Antonio. We meet with women veterans individually if they're not comfortable with the group discussion, with the group session to discuss their issues and how we can help. I also work with Harris County Veterans Treatment Court mentoring team, in which we work with veterans that are currently participating in that program. Through that program, veterans have the opportunity to expunge their felony charges that originate from a service connection disability. Typically, we see a lot of assaults, DWIs, DUIs, drug possessions, which all stem from substance abuse, PTSD, and any other recognized VA disability. It's a very rigorous program, and so having access to veteran mentors is vital to their success. And finally, of course, we host the 3-day family retreats in Central Texas, in which we bring women veterans and their families together for camaraderie and connection, and just to help them create new veteran friends in their own community.
Excellent. So what kind of, we're talking about mental health today, and what kind of mental health issues do you see most often with the population that you serve?
It's unfortunate, but mental health plays a huge role in women veterans, depression, anxiety, and of course, post-traumatic stress disorder, whether caused from war experiences, military sexual trauma, or simply trauma from everyday life, which has spiraled downward, ultimately, sometimes, you know, leading to suicide intervention on our part as well.
So you're studying right now to get your master's of social work.
Correct.
And what kind of stories do you hear? What stories have you heard from your female vets that have made an impact on you and that really show you, you know, the need that's out there and also how Grace After Fire is helping to meet that need?
So, you know, of course, there are very few women in the military, which spirals into very few women in veteran at the VA. Seeing there isn't a whole lot, you know, there are, you know, very few women veterans there. So seeing that our agency provides that really unique resource and that we cater to women veterans. I think I'm seeing that more as, wow, you know, we really do fill a gap for the VA and veteran services here in the Houston area, as well as San Antonio, but I'm specifically here for Houston. And seeing that a lot of the providers don't really provide very unique services to women veterans or male veterans, and seeing the difference that our agency provides and why we are unique, and the services that we provide really do help them. And in the fact that we're able to empathize and understand their situation, our agency is fully staffed by women veterans ourselves. So that's where we have that automatic empathy and compassion, because we've all been there. We've all strapped on boots, whether it's Navy boots, Army boots, it's a set of boots. We've been in the military and we've had to serve alongside our male counterparts.
And how many folks work with Grace After Fire?
So we have 6 on staff throughout Texas. We've got some staff over in Dallas, San Antonio, and here in Houston as well.
Okay. Can you give us the website, since we've been talking so much about Grace After Fire? I imagine people want to hear more, read more about this great organization.
Sure. www.graceafterfire.org. Very easy.
That's easy. Okay. Once again, we're speaking with Specialist Monique Rodriguez. We're talking about veterans and mental health here on 90.1 FM KPFT. So, Monique, the Department of Veterans Affairs, or the VA, has come under a great deal of scrutiny over the past few years due to long wait lists, overburdened providers, and a general lack of resources. In some cases, veterans suffering from PTSD have a difficult time accessing mental health providers, and in worst cases, they're dying before they can even be seen. Using your personal experience as a guide, how can the VA improve upon the services it offers to veterans?
So, despite all the hardships that the VA is experiencing in the media and with veterans, I feel as though they're trying to make changes. The VA is a huge organization. Making changes is a very, very slow process because of all the layers of bureaucracy. Ultimately, the VA needs more money to physically expand to accommodate the need, the veterans that are walking in through the door, as well as more staff to accommodate their needs. The VA in Houston is literally bursting at its seams with physical space. I also personally know many veteran VA staff members who are motivated, compassionate, and provide quality work in order to serve veterans, but they need more help.
And so the VA is... Well, just the military in general, you know, over the past probably 20 years or so, we've really upped the amount of money that we spend on defense. So, you know, what we're putting out there in combat, but I don't necessarily feel like we're putting that money into our veterans upon their return. Do you have similar sentiments? You know, what is your experience with the VA hospital? Do you have experience here in Houston?
So I've never been a patient of the VA simply because of the experiences I've heard through my peers. My own husband, he was a patient for a very short time. Obviously, you know, just as a lot of the media portrays, it was very poor quality service. But I really feel through my program and the my own personal experiences in talking with staff members that they're really trying, you know, they've just got too many layers of bureaucracy. They don't have enough funding. They physically don't have enough space to expand. So they're really trying the best that they can. And there's some great people there. You know, you have to work with what you've got. And that's what they're doing right now. You know, ultimately, they just need more money and more space.
Excellent. So, and this brings us, you know, from a policy perspective, because we always like to look at it like that. What can be done at a policy level to address the lack of resources across the board?
Funding. I mean, we need more money to help veterans succeed in nearly every area. Employment, housing, mental health, medical health. Veterans tend to lag behind their civilian counterparts as they struggle to acclimate and maintain a productive life. Not only is the post 9/11 generation of veterans struggling, Vietnam, Korean, Desert Storm veterans also continue to struggle. Surprisingly, I serve more Vietnam and Korean veterans than post 9/11 veterans in their efforts to lead productive lives even years later after service.
Interesting. So what can the general public do to help this process along? Is there anything the general public can do?
Absolutely. Supporting many of the great nonprofit agencies that are doing great work and really are helping veterans succeed. Many of these agencies, like Grace After Fire, would like to do more, but it comes down to funding. We can only do so much with the resources we are provided. Furthermore, encouraging your veteran friends to stay engaged with the community, inviting them to attend an event, or simply just hanging out with them at their house to keep them engaged with others. This will help to prevent so many of the veterans from falling into the vicious cycle of isolation, depression, and possibly substance abuse. Just looking out for your veteran friends and making sure that they're okay and letting them know that you're there can be very helpful.
And does Grace After Fire have it do any fundraisers? Or are there any events that the public can support? I imagine y'all certainly take donations, and
Absolutely.
That can be found on the website.
Absolutely. You can go to our website, graceafterfire.org, and we do have a donate to our agency. And I know that our CEO is currently working on really upping our fundraising efforts and making that more of a visible presence throughout the state of Texas.
Excellent. Well, Monique, thank you so much for joining us today and having a brief conversation about, veterans and mental health. And I know it's something that definitely needs to be ongoing. And as we continue to put troops out there with really no sign of bringing of it ending anytime soon. You know, this is the longest wartime period that we've probably ever experienced.
Absolutely.
Definitely, like you said, need more resources, need to make this a priority. You know, if you're putting yourself out there to serve our country, then need to take care of you upon your return. So thank you for your service.
Thank you.
And thank you for being
here. Thank you for having
today.
Me.
Yes. So our closing segment is something called I'm Not Political But. So how many times have you been chatting with friends, family, or acquaintances and had them tell you that they don't follow politics or policy for any number of reasons? Maybe you've said it yourself. We hope to make the connections between the issues that you care about and the action that is required to have your voice and your experience heard. So, that said, the city of Houston has a very important election tomorrow where we will be voting on mayor, city council, controller, and local, county, and state amendments. One of the most important propositions on the ballot is Proposition 1, or the Houston Equal Rights Ordinance. HERO would provide local solutions for local problems, giving 15 categories of people protections against discrimination in housing, public accommodations, and private employment. If someone feels like they have been discriminated against, they would be able to file a complaint with the city's Inspector General's office, which would then open up an investigation. If they found that discrimination took place, the entity would then be fined. This literally eliminates the need to make a federal case, saving individuals both time and money on federal court fees. Polls will be open tomorrow from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., and you can find your polling location by visiting www.harrisvotes.com. Also, be sure to check out the League of Women Voters Houston Nonpartisan Voting Guide for more information on the candidates and propositions. Visit www.lwvhouston.org for more information. And that's it for this episode of The Pulse, Heartbeat of a Healthy Houston. Please join us again on Monday, November 16th from 1 to 1:30 p.m. when we are going to be recapping tomorrow's municipal election. And until then, stay healthy, Houston.
Thank you for listening to this edition of The Pulse, brought to you by KPFT Pacific Radio and Legacy Community Health. We are the heartbeat of a healthy Houston.
Get up, stand up for